Hey, what's going on? How about a convo for Boxing Day, December 26, 2022? I am Norm along with Mike. I see that you've marked yourself safe on Facebook, Mr. Augello. That is an absolute blessing considering the way Buffalo has been absolutely obliterated by the elements. Let us know what's going on down there, Mike. We've seen the pictures, but from your perspective, wow.
I'm not making it up. We had it because, you know, we've had snowstorms here. I've had many a snowstorm here in Buffalo, but the combination of high winds and snow, there's one storm, the blizzard of 77, that is famous for Buffalo, where there wasn't a lot of snow, but it was like 65 to 70 mile an hour winds. And that's what it was here. We got significant snow, but then we had high winds. They said basically cat two or cat three hurricane force winds with snow. And when I woke up on Christmas Eve, I had a 5.5 foot snow drift in the middle of the driveway. And then finally the plows came and piled another foot on top of it at the end of the driveway. And literally just about 2 hours ago. So 2 days later, I was able, with the help of a couple good Samaritans and a couple neighbors, was able to dig out of the driveway. So, but we have driving bans all over the place. It's absolutely nuts. Anybody who goes, tries to go anywhere, you're insane. Just stay home. You know, I'm not going out on the road until the driving ban drives. And if I am going out, it'll be to the supermarket to load up on provisions and then coming right back. So it's, and you know what, it's like that all over the place. I mean, in the central US, the Bills played in Chicago. It was eight degrees with minus 23 degree temperatures. And throughout Canada, I heard there was a terrible bus accident in BC. So it's bad weather all over the place. It sucks.
OG's Commerce, thanks so much for joining us. Season's greetings. Merry Christmas. Hoping that things have been wonderful over the last couple of days. The weather notwithstanding, of course, this is about family. It's about happiness, certainly gratitude. And that is the theme of this show today. We're very thankful that Mr. Augello was safe. And I'm thankful that you guys are here with us. Southern Ontario has been hit too, not to the extent that Buffalo has, obviously, considering your geographic location, Mike. Mm-hmm. But really cold temperatures, high winds, tons of snow. We wanted the atmosphere, maybe not to this level, but hey, we pound on through it. And while we're all in our homes, snug, safe, and sound, we can talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs, second in the division at the break. Two losses, then picked up a win over the Flyers to wrap up at least the first half before Christmas. And interesting, right? William Nylander, a wonderful game. They extend their home point streak. Dryden Hunt, an interesting little pickup from Kyle Dubas. Many of them, not exactly enthralled by the play of Dennis Malgin, not necessarily because he's not, wasn't picking up points, but just what he represented. So I don't know if this is an about face for Kyle Dubas or the beginning of a bit of a change in terms of the philosophy, but he sends out miniature Malgin for a guy in Dryden Hunt who you could consider sandpaper, maybe not the toughest guy on the planet, but lots of energy, lots of spunk in there to kind of play a game that the Leafs certainly need.
All right, starting with the deal. I mean, it's not a blockbuster, obviously, but
not at all.
Dennis Malgin, clearly from the way he had playing in a scoring role with Tavares and Marner on the last four games before he was traded, he wasn't converting. He wasn't, you know, he was pointless in 12 games. So I think he provided, you know, hustle and speed on the fourth line. But I think the Leafs really don't need that on the fourth line. What they do need is grit, sandpaper, a little pushback, not goonery, but I mean, I just think that, you know, I mean, you see from like Zach Aston-Reese, he's not a behemoth, but you know, he'll throw the occasional check. He provides some pushback. He can't really score that well, but that's not what they got him for.
Right.
Dryden Hunt's sort of cut from the same cloth. You know, he's played for a few teams, most notably with the Rangers last year. He got claimed on waivers by Colorado. You know, Colorado was in a deficit in terms of forward help, and they needed somebody, and they claimed him off of waivers, and he played a bunch of games for them, didn't put up any kind of great offensive totals. Right. But the reason for this deal is, you know, Hunt is capable defensively. He's a good forechecker. He's not going to score a ton. He's probably a 13th forward. That's what he played a regular fourth line role with the Rangers. Mm-hmm. I think this is more recognition of the fact that the Leafs, after giving him almost half a season, the Dennis Malgin, was not as good as the other smaller forwards that the Leafs have given opportunities to, like SDA, like Joey Anderson, maybe like Alex Steeves or Adam Gaudette. You know, those players, some of them haven't gotten chances this year. Malgin's been given a chance. He really didn't pan out that well. I don't think that, you know, in my eyes, the Marchment deal still rings as a reason for resentment on the part of, and not Malgin, because he wasn't the one who made the deal. Right. I think it was not a great deal. It was probably one of Kyle Dubas's worst moves. But there's nothing they can do to undo that. Now you have the here and the now of Dennis Malgin being essentially a fourth line sort of okay forward. He was a restricted free agent with arbitration rights. I think this deal recognizes that they probably wouldn't have qualified him. And they got somebody in Hunt who's a UFA at the end of the year who might be able to provide a little bit of sandpaper against teams like Boston. And one of the videos out there, if you do a search on YouTube, one of the videos out there is of Dryden Hunt laying out David Pastrnak. Okay, that's kind of the stuff that the Leafs need. They're never going to be as tough as Tampa or Boston, but they have to have some pushback. And if they have pushback, then I think that takes a little bit of the heat off of their core group having to do that kind of stuff. And I think that's a good reason to make that deal. Now, we haven't seen Dryden Hunt yet, but I think we will see him occasionally. And I think, you know, we'll be able to draw our own conclusions from that.
This is the Convo, Norm, Mike, and you. Season's greetings. We appreciate you very much. It's all about gratitude right now. Thank you for everything you guys give to us. Without you, we're not here. So St. Louis, Arizona, Colorado. From what I'm reading, Hunt's supposed to draw in at least one of these games.
Sure.
You're a betting man. Do you know which one?
No, maybe. I mean, if I had to guess, you know, St. Louis is a more physical team, so maybe it gets a chance against them. But at some point during this road trip, just to touch on what you did in the intro, the Leafs did not play well. They played okay against the Rangers. They just couldn't convert offensive chances, and it was a one goal game with an empty netter. The Washington game was a truly putrid game where, I mean, when Erik Gustafsson is scoring a hat trick against you, you know the other team's, you know, is flipping the coin in its heads every time. But they did come back with one of their better efforts of the year against Tampa Bay. We can talk about that in a minute. Philadelphia, they were up 4-1, and then they sort of took their foot off the gas pedal and made it a competitive game against one of the teams in the league that's really underachieved.
So, Mike, when the Leafs shit the bed, and I kind of hate that phrase, but it's true. When they leave things to be desired in games, and they barely hold on after having leads, it shows vulnerability, and it shows that the struggle is real, Mike, because these crazy streaks and Marner going off and Nylander, of course, playing better than he ever has, and the goaltending great, it gets suspicious for me, right? It's not reality. It's never as great as you think it is. It's never as bad as we fear it can be. So the struggle is real, and I think it keeps the players and the team and the organization on its toes when the team in situations is exposed.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more the fact that right now, you know, I don't think we're spoiled in terms of being observers of this team, but, you know, last year they had, I think, 115 points. This year,
done everything except have playoff success. Everything.
Right. Yeah, and they had 115 points last year. They you know, they're on that pace this year. One of the top five records in the league. Unfortunately, they're in a division where that doesn't garner them a division title and home ice advantage. I think fans are holding them to a high standard, and they should. You know, you've got some of the best forwards in the league. They're the team-wise, they've been extremely successful. They should hold them to a higher standard. So against a team like Philadelphia, who has struggled this year, when you're up 4-1 in the third period, you don't expect them to give up two goals in less than a minute and then have to worry later on in the game about winning a game right. against them. You expect them to sort of like, okay, they're up 4-1, they're home and cooled out, that game is over with. You expect efforts like the effort against Tampa Bay, where against a team that they have a genuine rivalry with, a team that they've lost to in the playoffs, they played one of their best, they played the best two periods of the year. And then the third period, you know, the Tampa was still in the game when they really shouldn't have been, but right. in the end they pulled away and they win 4-1. That's what people expect from this team. Now, what they expect is this team to play the way they are playing right now in mid-April when the playoffs come around. But that, you know, we'll see that. Well, what I would like to see is before the trade deadline, what changes, what improvements that Kyle Dubas can make to make this team even more unbeatable. Because right now, unless Boston starts to play mortal, they're going to play Tampa in the first round again. And that's a team that has made three Stanley Cup finals, winning two cups and getting to a final 3 years in a row. That's probably the toughest first round matchup of any team in the NHL.
Well, you'd hate to think when all is said and done with this group of players together, Tavares, Nylander, Marner, Matthews by extension, Riley, and then behind the bench, Keefe, and upstairs, Dubas, that it never really achieved its potential greatness because it was constantly stonewalled by a few nemesis at such a pivotal time over and over. And primarily because those teams were built to win in the playoffs, and the Leafs over and over were built to show but really have no go when the chips were down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but that – okay, and I can't assume what's going to happen. I can only presume based on what has happened in the past. Mm. And – you know, have there been dramatic changes from last year to this year? Well, in one area there have been, goaltending. And they did lose by one game in game 7. So is Matt Murray and Ilya Samsonov going to make the difference
right.
compared to Jack Campbell? Well, possibly.
But Mike, just throw something up here. Every fucking series, this is the crazy thing. It's not as if it's not like New Jersey Leafs 2000. Mm-hmm. Remember? Leafs were on fire, got fucking clobbered in the first round by the Devils. I mean, I think the Devils went on and won the Stanley Cup. But you go back to Boston, 2019. They were up 3-2. They were up 3-2, and they were led after the first period. They were up 3-1 against the Habs. They had a series lead against the Tampa Bay Lightning last year. Okay. It's you know, this, well, we came within one game. That game 6, that opportunity to step on the neck of the opponents and finally finish it off, when those games were over and the Leafs could not get the job done, the writing was on the wall. And that's the thing, though, that one game may as well be an entire jump from one status to another status, a status of being really good to being really great. They were never able to get the job done over and over and over when the game and the series and that moment mattered the most.
Teams that are favored don't always win the series. Let's accept that as a premise. When they played Washington in 2017, Washington was heavily favored.
Yeah,
they lost in 6 games. When they played Boston the following year, Boston was favored. Boston won in 7 games. Okay. Now, the second time they played Boston, it was a pick'em. A lot of people thought Toronto would win. They had signed Tavares. Okay. They lost in 7 games. Columbus, they were favored. Montreal, they were favored. They should have won those series. They didn't. Last year, I don't care if the Leafs were ahead of Tampa in the standings. It was two-time Stanley Cup champions. Okay? They were not favored. They were advantage. They were not favored. So, but I'm sorry. It doesn't matter if you're favored or not. It matters if you're a team that's good enough based on you playing at your highest level to beat that team. And I, at no point last year, even when they were leading in game six, did I think the Toronto Maple Leafs were going to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now, I like the improvements that they made. I think that the goaltending is better this year. I think their defense is the best that it's been. But going, you know, before the Jake Muzzin injury, maybe it's still going to be in the end better than it's been. I think they need to improve up front. They need a winger on this on the second line. They can be better than Tampa.
Sure. But
are they now, even though they have the third best record in the NHL? No. No.
It's Super Strike Nine. Last year's playoff performance wasn't a bad performance.
No.
There's little solace in that, though, Super Strike. OG's Converts, Mike. There's little solace in, well, we took them down to the last game. You had the series lead and you couldn't put it away. Just like the year before and 2 years prior to that. And in other opportunities where you had you had the chance to take that leap. And here we are years down the line as Marner and Matthews and Nylander and Tavares mature and Dubas, the rope begins to lessen. And this again, it could be in a lot worse position. And we're moving forward to another milestone opportunity. But here we are all these years later, and they still haven't taken that leap. So the key here is, and we can even take a look at this Dryden Hunt deal and say, you know, it's kind of a it's not a deal that deserves fame or pomp and pageantry and, you know, all kinds of write-ups and just, you know, super attention. But from a detailed perspective, maybe this is the beginning of something.
It wasn't a bad performance in the playoffs. It just wasn't a winning performance.
Right.
And that is the difference. This team, you know, there are certain things that this team has needed to do in the playoffs that they haven't done. And until they do, then they're not going to win. Now, I think it's possible. You know, part of it is the maturation level of the Matthews and the Marners and Nylander to the point that, you know, they're going to provide that push, but they're not going to get pushed around by guys like Brandon Hagel and Nick Paul and Maroon.
Colin M says, Mike, the Leafs are better in every category.
Yeah, I don't give a good goddamn about the fucking analytics, okay? I care about who wins on the ice. The analytics are meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
All the numbers in the world. Okay, yeah, there's one number that matters. Who wins more games in a playoff series? Mm-hmm. That's what matters.
Yeah.
And I'm honestly, it's like, you know, oh, their Corsi numbers are great and their PD, you know, stick it.
Yeah, honestly. I've been going on about that since I was on Twitter years ago. The Leafs should have the Leafs should be going on
there. Coulda, shoulda.
Yeah, I know based on those numbers in 2016, the Leafs should be going on their seventh straight Stanley Cup championship. Anyway, names that are coming up in the chat here, Bunting. And of course, Sandin. So Sandin has a neck injury. The funny thing is the Leafs do have, despite not having Riley, despite not having, Riley at his best and a full guy who's, not in the best of positions right now. And then having Jake Muzzin, teetering on retirement, the Leafs do have bodies back there. So, you know, should we be concerned about what's going on with Rasmus Sandin right now, or can he just heal for as long as he needs to, whether it's a week or a couple of days, and know that, you know, there's somebody of substance who can, you know, fill his boots at least temporarily?
Well, they're one injury away from playing Mac Hollowell again. I'm not ripping on Mac Hollowell, but, I think he's an above average AHL defenseman, but I don't know whether he can play significant minutes in the NHL. I mean, with the Sandin injury, they had Jordy Benn back and Benn played with Liljegren. So they didn't really skip a beat. but they do need Sandin. And one of the things that they need Sandin for in the absence of Riley is being the point guy in the power play. And during against Philadelphia, they played five forwards on the power play. And, you know, that's not that's been experimented with before. I don't know as a long-term thing is something that they really want to do. So they're not going to rush Riley back. Riley probably is set to come back, I would say, probably the middle of January. He's just starting to skate now. Now, the thing that's scary about Sandin is we don't know, like, he hurt his neck. They held him out of the last game. They said he wasn't going to start the first game of the road trip in St. Louis. He's on the IR, but we haven't had a detailed indicator of how severe the injury is. Mm-hmm. Neck injuries are always an issue. And, you know, Sandin has had some real bad luck in terms of injuries. First the knee, now the neck. They really need him now, and he's really played well. So if they don't get him back, then they're going to have a couple weeks where they're really going to have to play six defensemen, hope they don't have any injuries, and wait until Riley gets back. You know, so their defense has really played, I'd say, a lot better than people would have expected based on the fact that they've lost, you know, their top three defensemen for a good chunk until Brody came back. And guys like Giordano and guys like Justin Hall really stepped up. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, you know, it's tougher to expect those guys to keep doing what they're doing. So they really need to get healthy and get those players back. And, you know, maybe down the line, they're going to have to probably trade for a defenseman to help the depth going forward.
Yeah. And in the now, the Leafs are in a really solid position. Colin M's stats reflect a team that is potentially better than it's ever been. And that makes us feel good. It's encouraging, but by no means should we feel like those stats will bear the results that we've sought after for so frigging long, but we continue forward. Michael Bunting, Michael Augello, you guys can you know, hash it out in terms of his unrestricted free agency status at the end of the year. We've been you know, big fans of what Michael Bunting has brought and what we expect him to continue to bring. Is he the kind of guy, Mike, you know, entering this kind of stage in his career and playing with who he has played? Are we saying, hey, you know, if he can continue to be, you know, aligned with the best players on the team, that, you know, I wouldn't say the sky's the limit for this guy, but he certainly has more upside and he's worth investing in?
I didn't think it was possible for the Leafs to not skip a beat from the departure of Zach Hyman, but they have.
Yeah.
And it's Michael Bunting. And they're different players. Zach Hyman is a much better defensive player. Right. He plays, you know, penalty kill. He has been able to play with talent, which is a tough thing to do. He's played well with Tavares and Matthews in Toronto. He's played great with McDavid and Edmonton. Mm-hmm. Bunting is the perfect complement to Austin Matthews. He goes into the corners. He picks out the puck. He gets it to skill. He doesn't hesitate from going in those dirty areas. In fact, he thrives on it. I think that, and, you know, Elliot Friedman does not report a rumor if it's not based in truth. And at the beginning of the year, he said there was talk about the Leafs signing Bunting to an 8-year deal. I think that's out there. I think that's a very distinct possibility. I think that could happen before the end of the year. He's a UFA at the end of the year.
An 8-year deal kind of player?
Yeah, well, no, but okay, he would sign an 8-year deal to extend the AAV out to an acceptable number, because that, you know, it's like what they wanted to do with Hyman, but Hyman wanted to hit a certain number. I don't blame him for that. And that, so that's the thing. Bunting wants to stay in Toronto. He loves playing here. He loves its home. He right. loves playing with Matthews. And I think that they will get that done. Now, whether the future of Kyle Dubas, whether the, like, Bunting getting signed rides on what happens. I would hope that they get this deal signed before the decision comes forth with Kyle, whether to bring back Kyle Dubas, and that obviously depends on whether they advance in the playoffs or not. But it seems to me a no-brainer to re-sign Bunting to a long, you know, basically spend the money that you're spending right now on Alex Kerfoot, on Michael Bunting, in the high threes, the low fours, yeah, on a long-term deal. Nobody's complaining. He's earned it.
So Hyman got to a status where his numbers, his expected numbers, and the number, the money that he wanted because of what he was able to produce were just too far out of hand. Are we saying that Michael Bunting's potential signing here could be preemptive, not letting him get to that point where he's going to want the $5+ million a year, and then stretch this out to an acceptable and digestible, you know, amount of money annually for the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, I mean, okay, say Bunting on a shorter term deal is a $5 million cap hit.
Right.
With each year you extend it, and if the last 3 years are lower, then you can bring down the AAV into the low fours, or maybe even into the high threes.
Right.
That's what they're looking to do, and that's what they were looking to do with Hyman. With Hyman, they wanted Hyman to sign an 8-year deal. But the AAV on that, probably for them to match the deal, would have brought the AAV under 5. And he was just going to make more money signing a 7-year deal with Edmonton than he would have on an 8-year deal with Toronto. Right. And he had already signed a bridge deal with Toronto where he was making in the twos. So I don't blame him, just like I don't blame Jack Campbell. I don't blame them going for the money because they weren't going to get that money in Toronto. Whereas Bunting, I think, will get the money in Toronto because he's willing to take that kind of deal where he stretches the AAV out. And I do think the signing of Bunting is a sign. And I am one person who does not think there is a danger that Austin Matthews will not be a Leaf after next season when his contract is up. I think this summer he will sign a long-term extension.
Right.
And the highest paid player in the NHL, more than Connor McDavid, because this organization cannot afford to let him go, and they will bend over backwards to bring him back.
The only guy you could replace Austin Matthews with is toiling away at Edmonton,
yeah,
right? And that's an extremely fucking long shot. The thing about Michael Bunting is there are other Michael Buntings out there. So here's the issue is how long do you want to get tied into a guy like this? Right. What if he's, you know, if his success is predicated on playing with guys like Marner and Matthews, and if he doesn't, is he that much of a self-starter where he can earn that kind of coin regardless of who he plays with? And again, not to really focus in on Bunting or be skeptical or pessimistic about what he offers, but he's the perfect kind of guy. But, you know, geez.
But see, the thing is, It's really, depending on the structure of the deal and depending on how the cap goes up, which we expect it to go up precipitously once the escrow is paid back from everything that happened with the pandemic. If Bunting's contract is, you know, no signing bonus and lower salary in the last few years, there's really no cap ramifications in the final 2 or 3 years of that deal if he ends up getting bought out, because right.
The money is manageable.
Right. Exactly. So okay. I personally think that, you know, Bunting, will be a very effective for the balance of that deal, you know, 5-6 years. And, you know, so that I don't think it's risky. I mean, okay, if it was a front loaded deal with a lot of signing bonus, then I would think, you know, it may be a little bit scary, but, you know, a 3-year deal or a 5-year deal, like people are talking about in the chat, that's just not going to work. The reason, and look at Tampa, Nick Paul, 5-year or 8-year deal, I think 3.1, 8-year deal for Sergachev, 8-year deal for Cirelli. I mean, different levels of players, but they recognize that signing these players to the 8-year deals and spreading out the AAV was extremely important for them for cap management purposes. And they, you know, they have guys like Stamkos and Kucherov and Hedman under market in terms of money. So The Leafs don't have that luxury. They're going to have to spend top dollar for Austin Matthews. They're going to have to spend top dollar to re-sign your everybody's favorite William Nylander and Mitch Marner. And they're going to have to depend on John Tavares to take less, which I think he will, to come back after his seven-year deal is over with. So all these things are factors, and we can worry about them when they come up. But I'm just saying, in terms of a guy like Michael Bunting, Michael Bunting will end up signing a contract probably around what Alex Kerfoot is making right now, and Alex Kerfoot won't be on the Leafs next year.
So, Mike V., Leafs should offer Bunting 6 years, $3 million AAV with a picture of Matthew Nyes attached to the contract. Why not bring both of them in and have them just wreak havoc, right?
I don't think that's $18 million for 6 years, okay? Michael Bunting, as a free agent going out there, could sign a deal for 5 years at $5 million. That's $25 million. The only way that the Leafs get Bunting is say they offer him $28 million for 8 years, which what's the cap hit on that? I think it's $3.5 million. Yeah. So they have to pay him more, but they have to find inventive ways to do it. And spreading the advantage of having the eighth year and spreading out the AAV, to me, it's a no-brainer to do that.
It's all about money, Mike. Not to reflect too far deep into the past, but remember the days of no salary cap, and you could sign any lunatic for any amount of money, and it was just basically an arms race, right? There's something I miss those days to an extent, right? Where it's just, well, we'll pay them, we need them, let's go get them. You know, here. In this new world now, every player has a dollar figure attached to them. And I think what we do is focus more on how much they're making than what they're producing for us, in the moment, right? You know, Mitch Marner is a phenomenal player, but nobody ever thinks he's worth that kind of money.
In this league.
And I've said, sorry, Mike, and I've said, everyone is overpaid. They're all overpaid. And I sure mathematically you have to be able to manage things properly or you're not going to be able to ice a team. But good God, man, like it's just getting a little bit out of hand here. Let's focus on what needs to be done, and that's to put a winner on the ice and go for the fucking title, man. Last couple of words and let's go.
In this league now with the salary cap, there are very few Bobby Ho leaks making $9 million a year.
Yeah, so that's, it sorted itself out. Like,
but there are still players that get overpaid. And I look in the chat, and the name that everybody is mentioning in terms of a must re-sign for the Leafs is David Kampf. And okay, they signed David Kampf to a 2-year deal at $1.5 million. And David Kampf, I think, has overperformed and overplayed that salary. So what do you want to bring David Kampf back at? Well, I think 2.1, 2.2. If he costs any more than that, then it's not a bargain. And that's the whole thing. It's all cost benefit analysis. And if they can't re-sign David Kampf at 2.1 million, then your number three center behind Austin Matthews and John Tavares might be Pontus Holmberg. But that's the whole thing. It's getting players at a certain price point. And if you don't get them at a certain point, they don't become they become less of a bargain.
Right.
I would love to have David Kampf back. He's been more than anybody expected. He has scored more than people thought he would because he scored one goal with Chicago. He's been a really good checking line center, a good penalty killer. But there's a certain amount that you pay those players and that you don't pay above a certain amount. And if he's asking for $3 million, then he's going to be getting $3 million someplace else.
Right. So we know that there are a group of individuals in this league who, based on what they give statistically and who they are from a personality perspective, are irreplaceable. Right. But most guys can be replaced. And that's where the cost benefit analysis really comes into play, because it's like, well, take the Zach Hyman situation. Right? Everybody wanted him back, but it was just too much. And
I wanted him back.
The Leafs found somebody who could fill his skates. Maybe not to the same extent, but when you break it down dollar for dollar, production for production, it worked out. And let's the Michael Bunting circumstance. We just can't say that. Oh, they knew it. I mean, Michael Bunting came in and did what he had to do, and now he's put himself in a position like Zach Hyman was in, and the Leafs have a little bit more a leverage, you know, as it stands. But what I'm saying though is a guy like David Kampf and, you know, most of the players in the league who are not of star status, you know, they are that you can supplant them with someone else who makes a little bit less to manage your books. But when the star guys have earned the right to make big money, every one of these fucking guys at the end of the day will have been overpaid unless they forget their Art Ross trophies, forget the hearts, forget all that bullshit. If these guys aren't leading you to the promised land and they're you're, you know, other than just, you know, posters on the wall and memes and all this other shit, if they're not winning titles for you, they're all overpaid. Last word to you, Mike.
Okay. A favorite line or favorite scene from the movie Moneyball, when they were talking about replacing Jason Giambi.
Right.
They couldn't replace Giambi because they couldn't afford it, but they replaced him in the aggregate.
Right.
And how did the Leafs do that?
With several.
They signed three players specifically.
Right.
Bunting, Kampf, and Nick Ritchie.
Right.
Ritchie was the most expensive, and he was the biggest failure. But they replaced Hyman, who was a penalty killer and a winger with Austin Matthews. Bunting was the winger with Austin Matthews. Kampf was the penalty killer, mm-hmm. and they replaced Hyman in the aggregate. So in general, that was a successful move, even with having to trade away Ritchie and give up a second round pick. Those signings in overall were successful in replacing Hyman. And what I'm saying is at the deadline, because there are places, even though the Leafs are playing great right now, there are places where they need to upgrade. And that's second line left wing and maybe a depth defenseman. If they can find those additions, then maybe for the first time in 18 years, 19 years when the playoffs start, they can advance past the first round.
Well, where the Leafs find themselves in a contemporary situation with the 2001-2002 Oakland A's is that they're on a budget, not because they're poor. Yes. It's because they have so much fucking money tied up into the top guys. So you really got to get creative and dig deep into the mathematics on everyone else. So far, they've been able to do that. And in the moment, these Maple Leafs, this group of Maple Leafs right now on Boxing Day 2022, leading into a three-game stretch before the end of the year, this team right now, amongst all the teams that have been spearheaded by St. Matthews and his band of saintly hockey talent, might be the best. This might be the best group that Austin Matthews and his group have fronted. So let's not lose sight of that. It's what happens between now and the trade deadline, and from the trade deadline to the end of the season in terms of positioning. And then again, it's four games, five games, six games, seven games, maybe more, maybe less. And that will, again, continue to show the rest of us that this team is, when the chips are down and push comes to shove, the ineptitude outweighs the positives, or it may finally take that leap into the unknown. And we can look back on the last 6 years and say, all of that was for this. And now we go. Mike, I hope you continue to stay safe and warm, and you go and get what you need to get when things subside. We're thinking about you. It's not the best of situations down there. But you have your health, and I'm sure despite everything that's going on right now and the frustration that's all around you, you're certainly you're happy for your health and what you have, because it's more than a lot of others. So thanks for being here, Mike. Follow Mike on Twitter. Check out his stuff at talkiebuzz.com. Yeah, get out there and support this guy. He's been with us since the very beginning, going back to, I think it's been 2009 since you and I started collaborating on AM 980, The Hook, and then we turned it into The Combo, then the Leafs Combo, and here we are. OG's Conference, no comment about the cabin look from Roots. I had this under the Christmas tree, and I'm walking around with my rum and eggnog, just kind of playing the old Tommy Shanks role. Good old SCTV reference there. Like the content, subscribe to the channel. Mike and I will try to collab again before the end of the year. It's a really strong possibility, not 100%, but we'll just see how she goes. Enjoy the games ahead, guys, and continue to support the channel. For Mike, I'm Norm. Season's greetings.